Extension number 11938, Real 18.
Mr. G. Eyston, Real 18. When did you arrive in Durban, Mr. Eyston?
We arrived in Durban 19th of June. But just before we get there, I'd just like to mention that if I can bring to mind the clamminess of being on board at Freetown, which is just north of the equator, if I remember rightly, the clamminess and the atmosphere, humidity and the atmosphere and sort of getting on our tempers a little bit, sort of tetchy. And then the plane came over that I mentioned at Strafters, and then with a thunderstorm, and we're all out in our shorts on the ship and nothing on but just the shorts and this thunderstorm coming down, and I'd seen nothing like it. I suppose in a sense it was a monsoon. I'd seen hailstones, I'd seen thunder showers and all the rest of it, but this was really the proverbial stair rods coming down. It was like a continuous stream of water coming down on us. And that was terrific. We really, really enjoyed this. And another thing about Freetown, at night, was seeing the little houses on the side with the lights, because we've been in darkness in Britain at this time. We were all blacked out, and I'd been for some time. But at Freetown, the lights going all the way up the hill on the side, and it seems like a hill comes right down to the sea with a very little bit of beach. It doesn't stretch away like some places do, where you get a plane from the sea going back, then hills later on. Here, the hills started right at the sea, and the houses were dotted in the green hillside all the way up. That really was a picture to us anyway, because we hadn't seen the lights on before. Well, we hadn't seen the lights on for some time. And then we got down into Durban. The first thing was getting ready for a big parade through the streets of Durban. And we marched out to the dockyard. Forming up in the dockyard was quite a problem. There were so many of us. And forming up on the dockyard was quite a problem in getting through the dockyard gates. Then we marched through the town and out onto the beach and away along the beach. Now that was really beautiful. A typical promenade type of beach with the sea and the sand and the lovely white houses, big houses, gardens.
Was this just a DLI parade?
I think it was a brigade parade, but I can't just remember that all the brigade ships were in Durban. I think some were probably in Cape Town. And then we'd meet up again out of Durban and form up in a convoy again. But I've got a feeling that some of the brigade were in Durban. Now, another thing I'm puzzled about is we certainly had a band, and whose band it was, I can't remember, because I don't remember our own army band. We had the dance band, but our own army band, I can't remember, so from Emeryn, because we lost the instruments in France, and I think we did get some back years later. But we certainly had the bugles. Now, whether we marched with just the bugles, but I'm nearly sure there was a band there, but I'm afraid I can't. Now, a battalion on the march is quite a big thing when they're in threes. You've got a platoon of 30 men, so you've got 10 ranks of three, and the officer in front and the sergeant at the back. And there are three of those in each company. And you've got four companies, and then you've got a quarter company of six platoons, which might have 40 or 50 in a platoon. So the battalion on the move, on the march, is quite an impressive sight. And with us marching fairly fast, 140, 160 to a minute, it was quite impressive, and the people really enjoyed it. They came out and they waved and threw flowers, and the people of Durban, they really enjoyed it. And then we went back to the boat and stored our rifles away again, and I think we stayed on board that night. And then the next 3 days we had off. Well, not all together off. Some alternate days we had off. Some had fatigues to do. If you had no fatigues, you were off. And as soon as we got to the dock gates going out, there were people there with cars waiting for us. And come on, Tommy. Come on, Tommy. And waving us into the cars. And there were three of us. I think Tom Luss was with us, definitely. And I think there might have been another two. And these two young ladies picked us up. I'm saying young ladies. They'd be about to tell with the African people. I suppose they were 25 to 30 in that sort of range. They picked us up in the car and took us to their home. Gave us a good feed. And this has amazed me since, when I've heard so much called about the black people. There was two black women and a black man, sort of a gardener and two women in the house. And they were happy as could be. They thought as much of us as the white people did, the white African people did. And it sickens me now to think of the problems there are in Africa, this apartheid business, that those people were so happy and they thoroughly enjoyed working for the white people. I can't understand where the problem has really come from since. Because these people really looked after us. And they gave us sandwiches and picnics, hampers and anything you wanted. We were Geordies by then. The Geordie must have been there, so we were all Geordies. Anything you want, Geordie? Can I get you any fruit or anything like this? And they took us to the zoo, which was really marvellous. One of the biggest zoos I'd seen, the Durban Zoo. And down to it was a dance hall on the beach. And one day they took us miles and miles and miles in the car to the Valley of a Thousand Hills, which is coming back to the Kurd country, the black, like the black, the Aborigines in Australia, but they're a tribe that live in these Thousand Hills. And it is actually a Valley of a Thousand Hills. And there's at the top, there's a hotel where you can have a meal and just sit and watch over these hills. It's a fantastic sight. It's not far from, Ladysmith. So we might have even been out of Durban by then. Anyway, Major Short, who was the MTO then, no, he wasn't, but he was with us then. I don't know what he was doing then, because Lockhart was still the MTO. He was a later MTO, Major Short. He married a girl, and they went back to Durban. He went out there as a newspaper man. And he stayed there. He could still be there. And he wasn't the only one who went back to Durban. It was a beautiful place. And when we think about it, it's almost as far south of the equator as Spain is above it. And so you've got the same sort of climate, but much greener. Much greener. There seems to be more rivers, and the place is... Well, Durban itself, as a town, is beautiful, and straight lines, similar to America, where... I can't recall the names of the streets now, but they were in straight lines, and they crossed, and traffic lights on the crossings even then.
Did you come back to the ship at night, and then go out again?
I came back to the ship every night. We had to report in every night. And then we were allowed out, as I said, if we had no fatigues, we were allowed out the same day. And we were fortunate that we had 3 days with these young ladies. And one of them sent me parcels, I should think, until we went to Sicily. And then I went to the hospital and lost from the unit. So I should think those parcels were coming all the time. They were really very, very good to us. I wrote back to them all the time. They weren't married. There was these two ladies and the mother and us. Well, I'm saying they weren't married. As far as I knew, they weren't married. They could have had husbands in the army, and they were away. But as far as I knew, they weren't married. And the mother was with them. A very big house. And I had a marvellous time there.
So then you would move from Durban farther afield?
Yes. After the 22nd, we left Durban and went back to sea again and formed up in convoy. We caught the convoy who had stopped in Cape Town. They'd sort of stopped in Cape Town early, so they were like a day catching. We stayed a day longer in Durban than they were after they had left Cape Town. And we formed up in convoy with a small escort. I don't know if the Exeter stayed with us or not, but we had a small escort. And then we went up the east coast of Africa, which is more or less straight up. We just did see the big island off Madagascar. We just did see that as we went through the strait. And then straight up to, and we stopped in Mombasa for about 2 days, getting more food. And the ship seemed to pick up what it could, wherever it could. So that I suppose if it ever went to Australia, it picked a load of beef up, or it went to Canada, it picked a load of beef up, and that would be stored in the fridges as long as it could. Vegetables, of course, was a problem. We used to try and pick them up where as often as they could. But Mombasa, we stayed again, like Freetown, was out at sea. In Durban, we were docked. And the ship was in a dock, and we could walk down the gangplank and off the ship, if we got past the police that were on the gangplank, top and bottom.
And from Mozambique, where did you go?
We went straight up the coast to Mombasa, where we just pulled in again and got more fuel on. Had another good shower of rain, fortunately. Funny how we hit the 2 showers of rain. and then we turned into the Red Sea off Aden and up the Red Sea. Now here is where I did mention that we lost 5 men through drinking salt, iced water without salt, without replacing the salt. And they just died quite suddenly. And of course there we did see the burial at sea fully. It was a full parade. Not very pleasant, but one of these things. And then of course we started with, well maybe before we started with the salt tablets, I don't know. But after that we did start getting salt tablets and went jaundice coloured. Up the Red Sea, which wasn't pleasant at all. There was no air. It was terrible. There was no air, no matter which way the ventilators were turned, you still got no air in at all. It was even worse than crossing the equator, because when we crossed the equator, we were out at sea and the air was circulating. But in the Red Sea, there was no air.
Was there any resentment about the way you were quartered as vis-a-vis the officers in this intense heat? Any grumblings of any kind?
Certainly there was grumblings, but nothing. It was what was expected, I think. More or less taken for granted that this happened. No, we weren't happy about it, by any means. I've tried to explain then that I sort of had some regrets that I hadn't taken a side where I'd take promotion. Instead of that, I stayed where the money was and carried on. It suited me better in a sense.
When did you arrive at Suez?
Suez, the 8th of July. Now, this was another performance where we finally got ashore. Suez, for all it's a big port, doesn't seem to have a dock as a dock, and it was a lighter business again. And I often wondered about the davits on ships, where they sort of why they're there. You'd think every ship in England, we think of every ship going into a dock and the dockside crane doing the work. But when you see a ship at sea actually loading stuff into these lighters, it's an amazing situation, really. And it took some time to get ashore there, quite a long time. And when we did get ashore, we were paraded right against the refinery, the oil refinery. And it was just like tar in the air. and it was getting into your face and biting with the heat of the sun, because we weren't properly sunburnt at this time. We'd been in the ship, we weren't sunburnt really, we weren't acclimatised. We were still white. We were turning pink, but we were still white.
And had you had any, once you got round the Cape and you were coming, had you some idea where you were going at this stage?
No.
You'd never been told?
No, it could have been India. It could have been Iraq, Basra.
You'd never been
told? It could have been Somaliland.
You'd never been told how to look after yourselves in this hint, have you?
Oh, no doubt we had, because we had lectures from the MO, we had lectures all over.
Was there any kind of cream that was issued to you
no.
to protect you against
not that
the
I recall. Oh, now that is a thing. There were baths on the ship, if you could get to one, and it was supposed to be arranged that East Company had a bath sort of every week, at least. We were on the boat 9 weeks, I was told. So it was arranged that each company should have a bath 9 weeks, every week. But it was salt water. And the ordinary soap was just no good at all. And we had to use this salt water soap, special salt water soap, which is in little packs, sort of maybe 2 inches by an inch by a quarter. Just like a slither of soap. It was hard, terribly hard. You still didn't get a lather with that, but you used to wash them. I suppose he got cooled down a little bit because the water wasn't too hot, and it was really a matter of cooling down and swilling off, but you were still left with a salt, a covering of salt, which didn't help us at all for getting sunburned, for getting a tan. It didn't help to getting acclimatized, because it sort of shielded the sun from the body. It was just like a big perspiration, you see. If you're perspiring well, you're putting salt out. So, in fact, if you are sweating, you sort of lick yourself, it is salt. And that's what happened to the 5 lads on the ship. They sweat so much that the salt had gone, and there was no damp, the mingle of things that they should have had. So, we'd had this salt water all the way, and we weren't getting brown to the way that we should have done. And with being on board, we're out the wind quite a lot. We used to go on deck as much as possible, but everybody couldn't be on deck at the same time, not the number that were there. You had to have a sort of period on deck, and then you went downstairs and did a lecture maybe, and then you would have a meal, and then you might get another spell on deck. The only thing was that at night, we seemed as though we could have a walk around the deck. Really look at things on the outside. I remember this quite well because I think we got some mail in Freetown. It must have been flown down, and it was there. There was some mail in Freetown when we got there anyway, and a lot of mail was taken off. And then, of course, there was mail at Durban when we got to Durban. Now, for all the French letters were flying out of the train when we left Colombton, which was a sign that I'm not going to use these anymore, I'm going to be true and all the rest of it. By the time we'd arrived in Durban, that some letters come through that the girls had found more soldiers just like us. And quite a lot of the lads got sick. The girlfriends in England weren't going to be as true as they'd said they were. And quite a lot of them came to me, and I don't know why they came to me, asking them how to write letters to slow the situation down. No doubt a lot of promises had been made that should never have been made to the girls in Colombton or Wellington, Tiverton and roundabout. And they came and asked me how to go about writing letters, not breaking the whatever was on off, but to curb it a little bit. And I had quite a job going on keeping these lads quiet. And this is how I remember standing out on the rails of the ship on the deck, and the lads coming across and asking how they should go about it. They didn't want to be blunt or too blunt. And, Why they came to me, I just don't know. But this went on for quite a while, and we sent a few dozen letters away of various types. Some were just to curb things down and slow them down a bit. Having said that, quite a lot of them went back to Clopton and got married when we did come back, and so we didn't stop them all by any means.
Was there any cases where the chaps were pretty cut up about this kind of situation?
Yes, yes. Some were really badly hurt, and they wanted to write back and say, well, if that's your attitude, I'm off. That's it. The finish. Well, to quote my own case, I was friendly with a young lady from Uffcombe, and we wrote for quite a long time. And then I realised that this young lady wasn't 18 or 19 at all. It turned out she was only 15. And she definitely lied about this, and she wrote back saying that she was only 15, and I wrote back and said, well, she'd lied, and if I didn't hear any more from her, that was good enough by me, and I didn't hear any more from her. But I was very annoyed about that, because fortunately it hadn't gone very far, but it could easily have gone, and I could have been in trouble if, because she was only 15. And this is the sort of thing that that was happening to quite a few of the lads. And as I've said, I think I did say that a lot of the people in Clopton were evacuees from London. Some were from Croydon, some were from Putney, and there's quite a lot of evacuees from different parts of London as well. And there was a funny thing about that was that some hated each other, these evacuees. A lot of the lads decided that it shouldn't go any further, because we knew wherever we were going to warfare, and whether we came back or not wasn't fair to the girl, in a sense. And on the other hand, it wasn't fair to the lad to be tied down with somebody that was going off with other soldiers. And yeah. I mean, we knew by this time that somebody was going to take our billets over wherever we were, somebody else was going to take them over.
Yeah, we recall widening it to the rest of the war, where this kind of Dear John letter had a really tragic effect upon a soldier, or difficult effect upon his from the point of view of his army career, army life?
There were two cases where it wasn't tragic, but it was a matter of couldn't care less. Having said that, they did things beyond the call of bravery, because they didn't care whether they went back or not. The girlfriend had left them, and I suppose, you know, with a young man, it can be a serious thing if a girl up and off, and this was happening. And I think there are two occasions, it wouldn't be fair to mention any names, but I think they did things on the attitude that they didn't care whether they came back or not. And they excelled. It wasn't brave in a sense, it was just pure madness. That's the only two cases I can recall of.
Can we come back to the dockside at Suez?
Hmm. Yes, we were paraded outside of this refinery, and the tar was really burning our faces and burning everything. And of course, we'd drawn our rifles by this time, and the headquarter company sergeant major, Ernie Taylor, the same Ernie Taylor who'd been the pianist in the band, started getting his rag up about this, that, and the other. We weren't standing to attention, or we weren't standing at ease properly, and he wasn't satisfied. We were all trying to get a smoke, which is the worst thing we could have done in the situation. And then the dust storm came up. What do they call that one now? The Kamchines up the desert. A trillia or something they call it down in Suez. The dust storm came, and of course everybody was covered with dust. And Tempest got more and more afraid. And he started picking on me, so I slung the rifle at him in the finish. And that was going to be a court-martial. However, again, it got squashed. Fortunately for me, because if it really stuck to his guns, it could have been very difficult. But I did. It just went on and on and on, and we're all just standing there. We were waiting for the train to go to Kassassin. I think they called it the Blue Train. I'm not sure that was the Blue Train from Suez to Kassassin. And we were waiting for this train coming along. Or we were waiting to board it. Well, we were waiting for people coming off the boat and for us to get on board to entrain. I don't know where the transport was. I don't know how the transport got there. I don't remember seeing it. In fact, I don't remember which transport in Kassassin.
So the train took you to Kassassin?
Kassassin, up the canal side.
What were your impressions of, early impressions?
Nothing. Once you left the canal, in fact, the canal itself is more or less in sand. Ismailia is greenish, a bit of an oasis style, but very, not much green there. And then Kassassin, there was nothing. There was a canal. And the camp was laid out. It was a proper transit camp laid out with Indian tents. Now, an Indian tent is, I suppose, 20 feet wide, 20 feet square, about 7 feet high, and then it's got a pointed top after that. It's a bit like a house. In shape, it's got a roof on top of a wall of about 7 feet, and they were all laid out in lines, and I don't know, I just can't remember how many there was, but I think there was about 18 to a tent. Inside the tent wasn't too bad, because if the sides were drawn back a bit, the wind used to blow through, and you had some shelter from the sun, and the wind would blow through. The big problem with Kassassin was dysentery. And if you were laid in bed, you couldn't have the sides open and let a lot of draft through. It had to be more or less closed. And the toilets was, again, our familiar trench in the sand. But we had got a little bit... smartened up now, that we had Hessian round it, so it was not everybody could see. They must have been 50, 60 yards away from the tents. And if you got dysentery and 60 yards to get, believe me, you spent your time in the toilet, you didn't bother going back to the tent. It was, well, to me it was really serious anyway, but I wasn't the only one. I mean, it was an epidemic. I suppose they call it jippy tummy today, but...
What did they give you for it?
I don't remember. I remember seeing the MO, but I don't remember what they gave us. I haven't any idea at all. I remember seeing him and one of his orderlies, because you couldn't do anything. You were just bed and running to the toilet. That's as much as you could do. In fact, as I said, you spent more time in the toilet than you did in bed, because as soon as you got back to bed, you're on your way again.
How long did it last?
Oh, I think that lasted 3 or 4 days, just like the seasickness did on the ship. A similar sort of situation, in a sense, except the seasickness comes from the other end. And I should think it lasted 3 or 4 days. And then we discovered a good cure was eggs. And they used to get these eggs about the size of a pigeon's egg. I don't know where they came from, but the yolks were green. And they used to boil hundreds at a time. And you could eat 4 or 5 of these things. We found that dried things up a lot, and it was improved things. Now, whether that was an official diet or not, I don't know. But I found the eggs did a lot to cure me anyway. The heat was really rough. And we did start to get some training going, like rifle training and a rope march to get the legs worn in, because after 9 weeks on the boat, the legs were soft, and, well, the bodies were soft. So we did start to get a little bit of training in.
I can't remember any MT. In fact, I don't think we had any at all. Not there. In fact, I don't remember working there at all, apart from this little bit of training that we did.
What about the food?
The food I remember are these eggs. And there was some bread there. The bread was the army square loaf with quite a quantity of sand in it. There was some fresh fruit and vegetables. And yes, we started then to get organised a bit. The cooks got to work. And they took a little while to settle down. But we started getting some food, and the food wasn't too bad then.